Her ticket to the Sylvia Brown show cost $45. It was a gift from her daughter-in-law.
How many people use their money that they couldn't afford to buy tickets to go see this woman who's telling them that their children are going to live, and they don't?
Houston, we have a problem.
Hello and welcome. Today is Thursday, the 5th of December, 2013, and you're listening to The Pseudoscientists, the official podcast of the Young Australian Skeptics. I'm Tom Lang, and joining me this week is Sarah McBride.
Hello, everyone.
And Jack Scanlon.
Hello, people.
I'm feeling a bit weird. I don't have headphones, and it's like a comfort thing I've lost, but that's okay. We're going to carry on. How are we all?
We're okay, I think. I'm assuming that Sarah's okay.
Yeah. Sarah, you can speak on behalf of me.
We have a bit of a shared consciousness, so yeah. I feel like empathetically we feel the same emotions.
And what's been happening that might be scientifically relevant? Jack, you're always doing something university related.
Well, yeah, everyone's been really busy because we haven't done a proper episode for about a month.
We apologize, guys.
Which is kind of the... That's probably
that's
what we should have touched on first. I don't know, because people expect regularity. I've been releasing the Unfiltered Thoughts, which, you know, I hope people have been appreciating. So there's something in the feed. But, you know, your weekly dose of Tom and stuff, it's not been there. People are, Tom well, deficiency.
You got to come along to ScienceWorks and
no vitamin T or vitamin S.
Yep.
People can get their vitamin B
just a busy
from Belinda
person.
With just, you know.
Yeah.
What have you been doing, Sarah?
Exams, mostly. I've had a week off now from exams.
So you're done with exams?
I am completely done.
What are you doing?
Right now... Well,
yeah, what
working,
do you fill your time with?
Working, rolling around on the floor.
Playing Pokemon.
I'm studying evolution as it is presented through the Pokemon medium.
I actually want to talk about that on Unfiltered Thoughts sometime, about how Pokemon presents.
I would be happy to talk about that with you.
It's generally presented in general in media.
It's very Lamarcky, isn't it?
It's not even that. It's not even intergenerational. It's within an individual. Evolving, so it's neither Lamarckian or Darwinian.
Yeah, it doesn't make
it's
any
not
sense.
Oh, no, yeah, no.
It's more
there was
like
actually a really good article on Bulbapedia that talked about
that
the difference between evolution and metamorphosis, and how Pokemon evolution is more akin to metamorphosis, but evolution can be observed within different species of Pokemon.
Can it? Like
really?
What?
That's not.
No. Hear the Pokemon.
Do
out.
That's not canon. That's not canon.
It is canon, because all Pokemon are descended from Mew, which was the first Pokemon.
Yeah, but there's like a god Pokemon as well, which is also a Pokemon.
There's a
lot of retconning with the Pokemon.
Yeah,
and then someone always
there.
Captures the god Pokemon and battles it against other Pokemon, and that's the point where I kind of tune out. I honestly don't do Pokemon, really, but I am up with how Pokemon
What kind
work.
Of 20-something-year-old person from Melbourne are you?
Look, I've wasted a lot of my life on video games, just not that one, okay? Ask me about Civilization.
Too invested in Lego Harry Potter.
Lego Harry Potter, all up with that, yep. Lego Star Wars, all the Lego games.
I think that could be a topic to talk about at a later date.
Yes,
maybe,
probably. On our different podcast, Talking Games and Wasting Youths with Tom and Sarah.
Yep.
Well, I look forward to it. It can be a bit of a spin-off. I've been doing lots of research stuff that's been piling up, a.k.a. exactly the same stuff as I've been doing before.
We always love hearing about you and your flies,
but it's
Jack.
The same stuff. Well,
tinkering
I haven't really been
with
doing
the clockwork
it.
Of life.
I haven't even been doing much fly stuff. I nearly, I didn't let my flies die, but I didn't feed them for a little while because I was busy doing stuff, and then I got them
you
there.
You neglected
there
your flies.
Some of the
You're
vials
like they're
may
gone,
have died.
Jack.
Yeah, they can't comprehend my majesty.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter?
No, it's fine. All I do is feed them. But all my stuff's been computer-based. I've been wrestling with this new program called Mr. Bayes that Tom finds a funny
Mr. Bayes.
Mr. Bayes. It's a complicated program to reconstruct phylogenies and gene trees from sequences, and it's really complicated and I don't really know how to use it, so I'm just like blindly stumbling around. It's sort of like a spaceship crashes in a forest and I like then the
and a monkey
dead.
Stumbles out of the woods and you are that monkey
and I'm like, oh, I wonder what this does, and I try and fly the spaceship and I crash into the sun. I haven't crashed into the sun yet.
And but that's happening.
That takes a while.
There's not much danger of that actually literally happening.
No. Nor is there with the monkey in the spaceship scenario.
Exactly.
It's more likely that you'll just slowly die in the void of space.
Or I'll get really frustrating phylogenetic results that don't make any sense. And which is equivalent to...
tear off a piece of the spaceship and use it as a crude weapon.
Dying in the vacuum of space.
Hmm.
More like the vacuum of tree space. That it makes sense to 3% of people.
N-dimensional matrices. That I didn't understand.
Okay.
So we had a Houston clip.
Did we? I thought...
Presumably.
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah. We did. Because that happens
every episode. I saw a little bit of it. It was about some psychic lady, and it was all very sad and tragic. And now I feel sad.
Well, the reason
the
reason I put that at the start of the show is that Sylvia Brown, who skeptic-y people probably know, died a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what she died of?
Being a horrible person.
Was there a big spate of jokes about it? I bet there was.
Not really, actually, because the reason I wanted to bring it up, like at least briefly, was that she was genuinely a horrible person, but she died, and it's like, what's the deal? How do you deal with someone you kind of dislike a lot dying? Do you move respectful, on with your life? Or do you make horrible jokes at the expense? So a lot of people were saying, you know, I hope her family's okay, but I'm not entirely sad that she's dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
To be honest, I wasn't like completely up on all the horrible things she'd done. That clip we played at the start of the show was only one example.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, telling someone that they're...
It's basically lying to vulnerable people for money is effectively how it goes.
Professional psychics sometimes do that. And there's that thing of, you know, is the psychic willfully ignorant? Do they think they have powers? Or are they trying to...
They just not give a crap. Yeah.
Grab money from grieving people.
Well,
so,
either case is bad, I guess.
I guess, yeah. But, you know.
The outcome's the same either way.
True. And there's a meta-ethical question about, you know, whether or not someone's intention to be evil is worse. Yeah. But let's not get into that because it's a science podcast and we don't care about ethics.
That's our new motto.
Hand me the scalpel. I'm cutting this...
I'm going in.
...thing open. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We've got a small handful of science stories we've plucked from the news headlines over the last couple of days.
But it's been a month since we've done proper
stuff.
Yeah,
but we haven't
been
plucking things from the headlines. Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a bit of a backlog to choose from.
And I thought the best way to deal with that would be, I think I said that last episode, was to just talk about all the science that happened.
So what's
happened? We can't do that. We've only got three new slots to fill.
Every now and then I hear about stuff.
Oh, I've got a couple of other things that we can chat about.
Climate change.
We are talking about three things. My iron fist that rules this podcast is very
in
clear.
In a velvet glove?
Yeah.
Great. Velvet.
Haven't you heard that saying?
No.
Iron fist in a velvet glove?
I've heard it now.
It's like similar to like a gilded cage kind of thing.
No, it's not. It's not at all like a gilded cage. Like, that's a thoroughly different metaphor.
No, it's a different metaphor, but like it's the same thing in that it's something that's bad that has been covered.
Hey.
But an iron fist isn't necessarily
people
bad.
People with iron fists can make cages. Mm. In some cases, it may make it easier because you can like hammer the pieces of metal together.
Right, and then your velvet glove is better at applying the gilt to the outside of the cage.
Okay. So I think my comparison stands there because it works out.
Look, it wasn't a totally awful comparison. Okay. Yeah, not bad at all.
Welcome to metaphor analysis.
Didn't even know the metaphor.
Whatever. Okay. So we only have three news items, and two of them are genetics based because, you know, there's been a month worth of genetic stuff going on.
It's all right. I've got non-genetic stuff.
Well,
so put Sarah in the middle. Shall I go first?
Well, maybe we should tell people what.
Do you want to go first? No, I think it'll be okay.
Well, we want to keep it a surprise.
We'll let them know, and then they can decide, and then we won't listen to their decisions because it's
a
podcast.
We don't care what they think.
Well, and because we can't hear them.
Actually, we
can. But if they get them right, then they'll feel good. So
what, they have to guess what the stories are?
No, they have to guess what order that we're going to do them in.
But they can put their vote in.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So they can SMS us their votes to the Young Australian Skeptics webpage.
With their SMS. Yep.
And then we'll do them in whatever order we were going to anyway.
And everyone feels like they have
and
the illusion of
that's
choice.
That's how the democratic process works in any case.
Bring it back to politics. Politics.
Yeah, that's how politicking works. So I'm going to be talking about mice, of course, and can your memories and can your learning be transmitted to your offspring? I would have said no, but studies would suggest otherwise.
Oh, my God. I'm going to be talking about soil bacteria and the fact that maybe they can incorporate mammoth DNA naturally, not a weird sciencey thing.
Mammoth
not
bacteria.
Not mad scientists.
in the ground.
Just normal bacteria.
Mm. And I'm going to be talking about some softer science in terms of some psych that's come out recently. There's two good stories about different psychological differences between conservatives and liberals.
Interesting. Mm. I'm sure we'll get into some nitty gritty stuff there. We'll try.
Tom says
edge around that one. Sorry, I didn't mean to yawn.
You did.
It was just I didn't even realize I was doing it. I'm not bored, Jack.
He's just tired.
Just tired of your crap.
Did have a little nap.
I speak to myself. He's tired of my crap.
So, which order would you like us to do these stories in? Put in your SMSs now.
Do you want a drum roll?
No, because the microphones will... Well, of course the microphones will pick that up. That's the point.
Drums, but you guys can... We don't have any drums.
Nice work, Einstein.
And we're going to do it. The results are in. Jack, do you want to go first?
Well, the SMSs, like, they said that I had to go first.
The viewers decided.
Yeah, so you have to. Yeah.
I'm going to have to. It's like Big Brother being voted off the podcast.
That's how democracy works.
If only. I'm sure lots of people would...
The tribe has
like
spoken. Go, Jack.
Come off the podcast. Okay, so... Bacteria are good at getting DNA, essentially. That's the bottom line. Whereas our genome tends to be acquired from our parents, like, most of the time. Sometimes HIV or random viruses inserting little things into your cells, but that's just individual cells. What bacteria do is that they just randomly grab DNA from members of different species, bacteria that are not related to them at all. Potentially, they can grab DNA from like non-bacteria as well.
They just find a bit of DNA lying around.
And they can also, they can find DNA in the environment from, you know, a cell that has been split open, its guts splayed across a rock.
5 second rule, that DNA is still okay.
Exactly. 5 seconds is not a lot of time to bacteria.
No.
Really. Once you get down to that level, over 5 seconds, lots of things could have happened. So, Norwegian and Danish researchers took the soil bacterium Acinetobacter baileyi. Congratulations. I cut out about 15 minutes
like 15
of me
tries.
Saying it incorrectly. And they found that it's just a regular soil bacteria, and it can take up lots of different DNA from its environment. Lots of bacteria can do this. E. coli can do it. We do it in the lab. But it can take up damaged DNA, and that's particularly interesting because a lot of DNA that exists in the environment is damaged. Now, this is a thing that comes up time and time again when you think of things like Jurassic Park, where the DNA was stored inside a mosquito for millions of years in amber. Turns out, biochemically, that doesn't happen. The DNA degrades over that period of time, even pristine conditions. But, you know, things are dying in the soil all the time. There's lots of cells bursting open. There's lots of DNA around. You would assume that maybe bacteria could, you know, have a lot of access to that DNA. Mm-hmm. It turns out they can use it even if it's badly damaged. Now, the cool thing here is, I guess from a microbiological genetics perspective, that's cool that they can take up DNA that's damaged. But to put it in a bit more of a, like a awesome context, this researchers said, okay, well, it's relatively difficult to find purified DNA that's damaged from natural causes. Because, you know, in the soil, you'll have fresh DNA that's been there for like a week and DNA that may have been there for 1,000 years and you don't know. What is a source of DNA that we can reliably say is damaged, but also has a cool factor so that news stories are written about
that it? That is very true. If they just got a little bit of E. coli DNA, everyone would be like, yawn.
Yeah, whatever. Bacteria on bacteria action. We see that in hospitals all the time. So what they did is they got mammoth bones. They ground them up. Got the DNA out of that and then gave it to the bacteria. And it turns out the bacteria could take up mammoth DNA and put it into their own genomes, even though it's been there for tens of thousands of
years.
That's
pretty cool. So did they grow little tusks and get little and furry?
Exactly, Tom. That's exactly what happened.
Giant rampaging
they grew
bacteria.
Bigger, like the size of like a pin.
Is this going to be a Sci-Fi Channel exclusive? Is that what you're saying, Jack? Because that sounds like what you're saying.
What would it be called? Mammothobacter or something.
Yeah. Mm. Mammotheria.
Jurassic Petri dish or something.
Yeah. Amoebic.
Amoeba are not bacteria.
No, I know. But
the sci-fi channel doesn't care.
I was going to go with a pun on amoebic dysentery, like amoebic, like murder something.
Anarchy. Yeah,
that's
dissent.
Not bad. Yeah. Escherichia unholi.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Moving right along.
So, like, this doesn't have any practical use in that you know, we can regrow a mammoth by getting like bacteria to soak up its DNA, that would be pretty crazy. Like, we can just do that ourselves.
And stick a bunch of bacteria together. Mm.
But it just shows that bacteria are insane and they will eat anything, essentially. They're not just eating the DNA, they're just taking it up and some of it's randomly incorporating into
its genome. So effectively what this does, by the sounds of it, is like normally everything undergoes mutation just randomly. Your DNA will slightly tweak from generation to generation. Some of that might be randomly good or randomly bad. And the bacteria are getting chunks of DNA from other organisms that have already field tested it, and they're like, oh, maybe this will work. Let's run it out for a while.
Yeah, essentially. It's like they're cheating.
That didn't. Yeah.
It's like
they're copying other people's homework.
So it's like in an exam. The, you know, a student that doesn't really know what's going on. This is a terrible analogy.
A student that can't even speak the language is just copying out chunks of other
multiple
people's
choice.
Essays.
There's four different answers.
No, it's
and
too
then
long to be multiple
A-C-T-M-G,
choice. I think essays makes
just,
yeah.
And so, sure, some of those essays might be for the wrong subject, or he's copied the wrong bit, but
completely
now and then,
wrong.
They'll get a chunk of the right kind of subject that'll make a bit of sense, and they've just saved themselves a lot of time.
Just an instant C minus.
Yeah, right. And for evolution, a C minus
is better
good
than
enough.
F. Yeah.
Is there any sort of way that we can then, I guess, look at the genomes of the acetobacter that are there, and like, can we like identify what genes there are? Like, because this experiment had the mammoth DNA there, and they were like, oh, the bacteria can take it up.
Yeah.
But is there any way of like just taking wild bacteria and then sequencing their genomes and then being like, oh, this
or are
this,
they all
this
just
line
all
aided-
wacky?
Did you just ask if there's a way to sequence a genome of a bacteria?
Like, is there some way to get
because people do that
gene
all the time.
And, like,
No. I'm saying, but like, can you then, in sequencing their DNA, can you differentiate between, oh, that's ostrich, that's an ostrich, that's a gene that's specific to an ostrich,
that's
as opposed to, oh, this is a variation upon an acetobacter.
And you've got the bacteria running around on really long legs.
Well, that's a classic thing in bioinformatics, is that we have so many sequenced genomes now, we just throw them up on the internet, and there's this place called NCBI, the non-redundant gene database. Essentially, it's all of the sequences that exist that people have put up there, and you run a thing called a blast search where you say, okay, I've sequenced the genome of this bacteria, I've got this gene, does it come from, like, what's it most closely related to? And you throw it in this thing and it searches through everything.
Man, Jack, your life sounds like something out of NCIS.
I'm a hacker.
We've got a DNA sequence.
We've
got to throw it up on, get a blast search happening.
Yeah.
It's refining. It's an ostrich. Quick, those things
arrest
only
the ostrich.
Yeah.
Put the UV light on it. Oh my God.
So much DNA, guys.
You don't want to know
so
where
you
it's
can.
From.
The perpetrator had DNA, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So what you could do, a blast search is kind of a rough and ready sort of thing, but you could assemble all of the orthologs or the different versions of that gene and put it into a phylogenetic tree, and you'd say, well, this gene from this bacteria clusters with birds. That doesn't make any sense from an evolutionary perspective.
Like, it must have eaten a bird at one point.
Well, or
flying
a bird died
bacteria.
And it, like, you know, something
yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
So that doesn't happen. Like, bacteria aren't just brimming with bird genes or lizard genes, but that does happen from time to time. Mm. Generally, bacteria swap the DNA between themselves.
Yeah.
So that's the major issue with antibiotic resistance, is that you get bacteria that have been selected for resistance to the crazy, awesome antibiotic.
Once one of them gets it, he'll just give it to all his friends.
Yeah, and then
everyone.
They'll share it with the nasty bug that can actually do
kill
something
people.
With it. So take your antibiotics, people.
That's a fun little
all of the antibiotics. Don't stop the course.
A fun little research that a lot of people don't know about is that, or a fun little bit of information is that bacteria don't just split themselves asexually, though they do. They also have sex.
They have little pili thingies.
Yeah, they swap bits of DNA with other bacteria. They're like, hey, I'll give you a bit of this, give me a bit of that, shuffle them around, let's go. And then they split themselves. Then you end up with all kinds of crazy combinations of
stuff. And that's why
stuff.
A bacterial species doesn't really make much sense.
Mm.
The biological species concept of, like, two things are different species if they can't mate and have fertile offspring.
It's a grey area.
It doesn't make sense with bacteria because they can exchange DNA with anybody. But also, they don't reproduce in that way normally. Mm. They just split in two. So it's like, you're a different species if you can't split into yourself.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. It doesn't make any sense.
You've just got to take a thumb at it.
Bacteria
cool.
are crazy people.
Mm.
They're not people.
They're but crazy.
Unless they get some people DNA, Jack, and then they could be partly people.
Yeah.
At what point are you not? You probably need most of the
Soylent
DNA.
Soylent E. coli are people.
So do you want to go next, Sarah? I mean, our voters have decided.
Oh, they have decided?
Yeah,
am I to be next?
You're going second to break
well,
up the genetics
Well, who am I to deny
stuff?
The people what they want? So I've got a pair of interesting studies here from October and November, so in the month that I wasn't really doing anything for the podcast, guys. and they both pertain to liberalism and conservatism, as in the political spectrum, basically. And there's been a couple of psychological studies that have been published about the nature of people who are liberal and who are, you know, who prescribe to conservative beliefs. So the first one that we've got is from Duke University in America. And basically it's examined, they wanted to find out whether liberals or conservatives hold stronger beliefs or like more strongly adhere to the doctrines of their...
And less likely to be talked out of things.
Yeah. Do you guys have any ideas or opinions on which you might
think? I think both sides would be pretty strongly held. I mean, both sides get pretty rabid. And probably depends what we're talking about.
Because it's a bit of a false dichotomy, I guess, to put things into the liberal-conservative spectrum anyway. Mm. Because there's other like
what you probably need is to have radical and not so radical. And the radical people could lie on both sides.
Yeah.
And the not so radical people are just closer to the center on both sides, probably. Is that the answer?
Yes, that is the answer,
yeah.
Tom.
Whoa.
So the research is pretty common sense. But basically, what it said is that, contrary to their hypothesis, which I think was leaning more towards conservative beliefs being more strongly adhered to,
those pinko communist scientists.
basically, the study looked at 530-ish adults, and they found that basically people who have really strong liberal beliefs and people who have really strong conservative beliefs have equal, you know, or comparable levels of adherence to the doctrine, and also they display belief superiority,
They think they're better than other people.
Exactly.
Because of what they believe. So it probably just comes down to if you're one of the kind of people who will hold onto your beliefs very strongly, it's just whichever one you've been exposed to first and most is the one you're going to stick with forever.
Exactly. And then the people who were more moderate didn't exhibit belief superiority in that they were kind of like, oh, well, I believe this, but just because you believe that doesn't mean that you're a horrible person.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously the more radical people on both sides, they found, actually like almost perfectly equal, they found in the liberal and conservative that they had, oh, you know, well, I believe this and it is the right belief, therefore everyone else is wrong. So that was quite interesting that I found. And there was, they did find that that changed on what topic they were talking about. Another thing that Tom said.
Oh, so you could be radical on some topics, not radical on other topics.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And the types of topics that, that people were more radical on were different between people who identified as being liberal and people who identified as being conservative.
I see. So someone who's a conservative would be radical about something like, just to pick something out, marijuana control.
Yeah.
Whereas people who were
conservative were more
about religion
about
or something.
Illegal immigration and things like that.
Yeah, cool.
Which, I mean, sounds like basically stuff that we already knew, but it was quite interesting to see it all like summarized
into
a good...
up.
Yeah, it was quite a good study, actually. And
I always wonder how... Because that is a pretty, you know...
it's an understandable conclusion.
Yeah, so it's something that people could have come to through common sense. I wonder how many of those sorts of beliefs that we can have about the way society operates could just be studied and then we'd actually know for a fact. We'd have data behind it. Like, does that sociological research just happen because people are like, oh, I wonder if this thing that I think is probably true is true?
I would say so.
Or are people just like, you know, let's study politics.
Throw the wall and see what sticks. I would say it's a little bit of both.
Because
just like
it's weird, like, having this quote-unquote scientific outlook about the world and you're like, I want evidence for all my beliefs. But there's heaps of beliefs that we have about the way society operates that we have no evidence for other than our own, like,
a lot of things we think about are incredibly fuzzy. That's true. And, I mean, most of our beliefs and ways we think the world works operate in very grey areas. But people are designed to look for patterns. And even though all of those patterns will just be based on your small circle of friends and family, I still think that almost constitutes a little bit of a study. And obviously, we're going to be really biased on most things.
Because you're biased, your beliefs are biased about the environment you grow up in.
Absolutely.
But also the sort of quote-unquote data sets that you have.
And we can only hope that a lot of those biases and a lot of those beliefs are the ones that aren't super important. Like, ooh, people who like rap music are better than people who like jazz.
Well, you just wait until the rap riots start.
You just wait until someone does a scientific study on that.
People start stabbing people with trumpets.
Yeah, okay.
And you will be sorry.
My point being that people believe things like that based on the people they hang out with and the kind of stuff they've experienced. And frankly, for stuff like that, it doesn't really matter a lot, probably.
Mm.
As I'm saying this, people are at home being like, what? It matters so much. But I think the big issue stuff is hopefully the stuff that gets studied a bit more.
Yeah. So, I mean, the stuff that they had in there was like healthcare, legal immigration, blah, blah, blah. It was to do with the election and things
rap
like that.
Rap jazz.
The other study that I wanted to talk about, Jack, was something that you guys probably won't get the right answer on, which was looking at differences between liberals and conservatives in terms of actual agreement amongst those groups of people.
Like
people
within the groups?
Within the groups.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this.
So people who identify as being liberal in their politics and people who identify as being conservative in their politics, they were asked into different groups to say whether they thought their beliefs were typical of that political spectrum. And there were two interesting things that were observed within the two groups.
Do we have to guess what?
Well, it's kind of a bit
hard. Do we have to guess what the research findings were?
I want to guess what the research findings was.
All right, you can guess if you want.
Well, I think and I'm living in my little liberal echo chamber.
Yeah.
I find that on the left wing, there's so much infighting because everyone's trying to be more lefty and more open-minded and more like accepting of everyone. Other people are like, no, but this particular topic, like gay rights, is super important. And then other people will be like, no, but immigration is super way more important. And someone else will be like, guys, you're both being really transphobic about this. And then everybody is fighting over...
Someone's like, you're being really transphobic. We need to make a bullet train in Australia right now.
And so everyone cares about all these things, but they can't agree on which one to care about most. And meanwhile, from this point of view, it always seems like the conservatives have been like, hey, guys, shall we just all get together and screw everybody? Yeah, let's do that and let's make some money out of mining while we're at it.
Okay. Well, Tom, interesting view there.
That's the view I have, but I'm sure that's not the correct one.
Okay. So what it did show, it was political beliefs and like general beliefs, like I like coffee or like, you know, I think jazz music is better than rap music, for an example. And basically people who identified as liberal had what they call a true false uniqueness.
Okay.
And people in a conservative with conservative beliefs had true false consensus.
It sounds like hippie mumbo.
So liberal people thought they were special, and conservative people thought they were all alike.
Yeah. Okay. So liberal people were like, "Nah, like my beliefs within the liberal area,
super liberal.
They're not typical, or like you know, oh my coffee." Well, I don't like coffee as much as everyone else.
Yeah.
None of my friends understand my vegan anarcho-capitalist society
ideas. I know.
I mean, they try, but they're still fairly phobic about my weird headkin and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So they found that, although the actual consensus in what the beliefs were between the conservatives and the liberals was, like, the same.
Okay.
But that makes so much sense when you look at populist politics in Australia between right-wing parties and quote-unquote more left-wing parties.
Because the conservative sides are generally all about doing things the way they've always been done and let's all be a big happy community kind of thing.
So no, but all the conservatives were like, oh, well, everybody in this political thinks the same thing about all these issues. I'm the same and everyone else the same as me. Mm-hmm. When really there was more discord within them.
And that's why it seems in Australia for the past 20 years, the more conservative parties of the major two parties, the Liberal Party...
They always assume everyone is all alike.
They tend to have the populist policies on boat people, immigration.
They go, well, I'm pretty racist, so everyone's pretty racist.
Yeah, global warming, blah, 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 things like that. Mining tax, carbon tax, like it's what the people want.
But they just assume that because it's what they want. Like,
maybe people would choose their option over the other option if they were given like no information, which they're not really given.
And so then, are you saying that when the liberal, when the more left wing types get into power, they say, "Well, we think this, but probably other people think a whole lot of different things. So let's just be very wishy-washy
like,
about
we don't,
it."
We don't want to push something because we might piss people off.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. So that just makes politics even more depressing than it was before.
No,
but it kind of makes sense.
I'm actually... I've become a little bit more positive about politics recently.
Oh, okay.
Because the current government is just I don't think they've done anything right.
No, there has not been anything that they have announced or that I've seen that I have agreed with.
No, it's hang on, not hang even on. That.
I think before you go any further,
I
need to like record some sort of like ukulele disclaimer. Thing so that every time we slip into complaining about the current government in Australia, it's just like a cheerful little ukulele thing that comes up underneath.
The opinions and then it just disappears.
Feel free to like edit that in if you want.
Totally. That'd be fun. The political
rant. It's Tom's anti-Abbott corner.
No. But here's the interesting thing. If I was a Liberal voter and I had voted for Abbott, I'd be really pissed off.
Yeah, because he's not doing what he said he would.
He's not even doing what he promised. Like, he's doing shitty things, but he's not doing the shitty things he promised he would do. Like, he's not even doing the stuff I was worried about. He's not... Like,
worse than even
him.
Anybody could imagine.
No, but
imagine.
Here's the thing. It's not as bad because they're so incompetent. They're not even getting all the bad stuff done.
They're incompetent at being bad.
Exactly. Yeah. If they knew what they were doing and they were really good at pushing through all the like evil policies, I'd be really worried.
And this is like
but
the
it turns
final,
out they're ineffectual.
This is the nail in the coffin. It's like the Bush administration in America.
Yeah.
Mm.
The nail in the coffin of conspiracy theories where you have to invoke this higher level government because obviously the government that really does exist is just so incompetent that they're not able to pull
people
off
like to believe
like
there's a bigger plan.
They've kind of sunk to like, you know, ineffectual comedy villain level kind of things.
The funny thing is though that the cult conspiracy theories are constantly being confirmed with like the NSA and the Obama drone stuff.
Yeah, but that's just
that
like
means.
One person within the government that's like, I just want to spy on everyone. And the higher ups are like, yeah,
thing,
whatever.
The NSA has gotten to the point where the government can't even control them and doesn't know what they're doing. It's crazy.
Yeah. There's been Australian stuff as well with ASIO where they're like,
we're just not that organized.
Which going into other countries.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big thing at the moment.
We're Bush League spying internationally, basically. Or are we? Or do we just not know?
I'm just waiting
for a drone
ruse.
To come in and blow this studio up.
Drone hovering out the window and they're like, shit, they're onto us.
Is it delivering a package or a or a
well,
kind
I did
of package?
Buy something from Amazon, but
so what's
going
with this Amazon drone thing? I haven't heard anything about
that. They're sending out quadricopters to...
Apparently they want to get packages. Drones and like those... like you
How
said.
Is that even remotely practical?
Well, they are remotely controlled. Let's move on to Tom's
thing.
So
they're just trying to... Because Amazon...
It's hype, I
wasn't
think.
Amazon famous for, like, paying its warehouse staff, like, absolutely awfully?
Now they don't have to pay robots.
Exactly. So now they've just cut down on that and they've just got more IT guys.
Awesome.
That's the future. So my interesting little study was looking at... It's not too genetics-y.
No.
It's looking at how mice... can possibly pass on their experiences to their offspring, which is really weird. Because, look, I've always been of the
camp?
Whole...
Opinion,
belief. No, these don't seem right. But, you know, when you have kids, if you're male, okay, let's say all you're passing along to them is some genetic information. If you're female, you can affect them in other ways, say if you smoke
by
during
nurturing
pregnancy.
Them, you know.
Yeah. If you're malnourished, your kids
and
won't
develop
as well.
And presuming if you're male, you're not around to actually, like, look
right,
after
right,
the
right.
kids.
But I'm speaking just purely biologically. That little genetic package the guy and the girl makes their kid out of should be fairly unaffected by your life. It's just genes. And those little genes contained in your testes or your ovaries aren't going to be affected by most of the things you do. If you lose an arm, if you're good at music, if you really like pistachio nuts.
If you're good at music and also lose an arm and you're like the best one-arm violin player in the world.
Your kids aren't going to grow up to be one-arm violin players because it's not the kind of thing that codes genetically.
Yeah.
But there's this
They might
study.
Be inspired by your
okay,
moving
yes.
life
anyway,
story.
Anyway, Jack,
that's not genetics. Okay, Jack, that's a totally different thing and you know it. So some scientists at the Emory University in Atlanta... Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. No, not in Atlantis, Jack. Have done this really weird study where what they did was they got some male mice and they, you know, did some classic research stuff where they wafted in a certain smell, like a very distinctive kind of sweet cherry smell into the mice's enclosure while they gave them small electric shocks to make it so that they were afraid of this smell. And after a while, they had them conditioned to associate the the smell with the shock. So after a while, they just put in the smell and the mice would kind of flinch like they were going to get shocked. Okay. Kind of mean on the mice, I know.
No. They're used to it.
That's science.
What?
But then what they did was they got these, they had these mice reproduce through a variety of methods, old-fashioned style, IVF. Okay, now these are male mice, so it's not like they were pregnant while this was happening.
Yeah.
They just got their sperm afterwards and they made new little mice with it through processes I'm sure you're all aware of. And they found that the offspring of these mice, having never experienced this cherry smell, would still flinch when they pumped it through. Huh. They would show fear reactions when they pumped in this chemical, which is really, really weird. And at the moment, it's, what did they call it? Acetophenone, which was the chemical scent. It's like an artificial smell. And right now, they don't have very good evidence of how this is happening. All they have is some very strong data that shows that this is happening.
Well, I'm betting that it's epigenetics.
Well,
we've never talked about that before.
Yeah, probably is some kind of epigenetics.
We have, yeah. I was
epigenetics being the way that certain things happening in your life can... They don't alter your genetic code, but they do activate or deactivate certain genes. So say you grow up in an environment where there's very little food, your body will sort of switch off and switch on certain genes so that you'll make the most of all your food and you'll always be very hungry and you'll put on weight a lot when you have the chance to get some food. Now, that's not the kind of thing that is in your genetic code, but it is involved in...
It's like having a switch in your genetic code that can be switched
it's
on or off.
It's associated with it.
Then can change how much or how
so
often
when,
the gene is expressed.
But DNA by itself isn't what is essentially in your cells. Mm. It's DNA and proteins and other little modifications to the DNA that don't actually change the way the DNA itself is read.
But here's the thing, does that kind of epigenetic environmental influence usually adjust your germ cells, which are the DNA in your testicles and your ovaries?
It can.
Okay.
That's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, there's such thing as transgenerational epigenetic changes.
But it's very strange, and they also found that the mice, like the baby mice, had a larger receptive area in their brains for these smells.
Mm. Now, the thing is here that these sorts of studies, I don't think...
This is early days.
Memory stuff hasn't... I think this is probably one of the first studies to actually look at memory and aversion in something like a mouse or a mammal.
Mm.
But these sorts of effects have been shown before with regards to other things. Like the classic one is hunger. They looked transgenerationally at humans that went through famines and they found effects of the grandparents having gone through a famine on the grandchildren.
Yep.
And there's heaps of stuff like that in plants whereby you grow up in one area and then you have the seeds going to somewhere else and it's the epigenetic markers that change how the plants grow up. But what happens is that after a certain number of generations, and it's usually
the
not more than
diminishes.
Four, the effect disappears if it's not being reinforced.
Mm.
So it's not like this is actually... This is one of the major things, the problems I have with the sort of popular science thing around epigenetics is that it doesn't actually explain evolutionary processes over long periods of time because if the selection pressure disappears, then the effect disappears.
Mm. Unless what you're doing is selecting over a long period of time for individuals who respond better to those epigenetic influences through more standard genetic
means. So then you'd be removing people who didn't have those epigenetic influences on them.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, this is a very interesting thing because it's an incredibly specific stimulus. It's not something like hunger, which is a huge effect on many parts of the body.
It existed in generations and generations.
Yeah, this is a specific response to a specific smell, which I found really strange.
It implies that the smell, some part of the smell can be coded in epigenetic changes.
Yep.
So one of the things I'd want to know about this research, I don't know if they did this in the study or not, would be to take very similar and related compounds and see if they also were avert.
I would like to see more of it as well.
And see like what specifically...
Could, yeah, how specific is it? Are they in general potentially more susceptible to associating...
Smells with stimuli,
or is it that particular compound?
And seeing if you can do different stimuli. I guess fear is a very strong one, but seeing if you can do, I don't know, aversion or even attraction stimuli or various things like that.
Or art.
See if you can make the rats like the colour green and see if the kids like the colour green.
Get the mice to like jazz over rap.
Absolutely. There's lots of potential.
We'll have some mice soldiers in the war.
I'm a big fan of psychology.
Not saying what side I'm on. Just saying that a war is coming.
A war is coming, and you want to be on the side of the lab rats.
So I've got a bit of a Juggernauts to talk about.
Yes.
And because we didn't have enough genetics with the two genetics news items, I'm going to have a bit of a brief foray into some genetics in Juggernauts.
This is why I like to err on the side of like soft science when I'm talking with you guys.
I generally avoid genetics.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason I'm talking about this thing in Juggernauts that I haven't revealed yet is that I've been doing it a lot. So shoot me for doing something I've been thinking about. So... I'm going to talk about alignment, and I'm not talking about spinal alignment with regards
to chiropractic
stuff.
What about planetary alignment?
Or planetary alignment and cosmic...
What about chaotic neutral alignment?
Oh.
D&D. More like D and no.
More like DNA.
I like that one.
I'm talking about alignment in a bioinformatic sense. So, when you have two genes, say, that are made of DNA nucleotides... One is from a penguin and one is from a magpie. And you want to see how they've evolved. So, no, okay. Say you've got three. So you've got a penguin, a magpie, and a dog.
Walking to a bar.
With three genes.
You've got these three different genes and they're all essentially the same gene because they came from the common ancestor. The gene was the same. It's just a different version of the gene in the different species. And you want to make a phylogenetic tree out of that. You want to see how closely related they are. What you need to do first is create an alignment. And that alignment essentially means that you have each nucleotide lining up with its respective nucleotide. And that sounds pretty similar because, you know, just put them together and see what fits and what doesn't. But it's not actually quite as simple as that because in evolution, you can get things... that delete regions and insert random regions. So
all your matching bits could be shuffled up.
Yeah, so they could be shuffled up. So what you have to do is essentially you get the computer to do this. You're not doing it by hand. It'd be ridiculous. You get the computer an algorithm to basically make the perfect alignment for the sequences. And there's various different ways to do that. But it gets pretty complicated. And you can do this with DNA or protein. I do a lot with protein because it turns out protein actually evolves slower than DNA. Yeah, I use protein alignments. And they're actually a bit more complicated because you've got, you know, 20 different amino acids rather than four different nucleotides. But this is really important for phylogenetic reconstruction. And one thing, if you happen to one day do an alignment, remember, you can only align sequences that actually, you know, they're related by evolutionary distance. If they're not, if it's like, if
just
you get two
things.
Different genes that are completely unrelated and try and align them, they might align a little bit because everything randomly aligns.
But it will just be random.
Things. But it will be random and you'll get a terrible tree because it's not a real tree. It's not
hot tip there from Jack.
Be careful when you're doing your
alignments.
That's
a rookie mistake. And later on, we'll do a Juggernauts on the word phylogenetic reconstruction, which you just very casually
just casually slip that in. That's essentially just,
so,
you know,
so
there's a tree.
Just in one sentence, what is alignment?
It's taking sequences and making sure that...
They align?
Yeah,
seeing
they align.
Seeing how similar they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. And then making genetic or phylogenetic inferences from that.
Yeah. Seeing how they are related to it, like a family tree.
Cool.
So that's what I do all the time. A fascinating insight into my life. It's not that fascinating, and it's not really a life. Whoa, depressing moment. No, science is cool. Go do science, kids. So question of the week... A
what
question
was the
from
question
a month
last
ago.
Week?
Nobody remembers except
what
for
was
me.
It, Jack?
And I have
we
it
had
right
a lot of responses.
Was
we
I
did.
Here that time? I was, wasn't I?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I feel like I was last
you
in
were,
about
you
a month
were.
Ago.
I wasn't there.
The question was, does skepticism have an image problem?
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I remember that one.
Before we get into, quickly, some views of other people, what are your ideas?
Well,
because you guys kind of... outside the skeptical community, in
I
a
am
way.
Actually.
I mean, I recruited you. I pulled you into the podcast. You're
and
like,
I'm very
a humble science communicator.
As little attention as possible to almost everything.
Yeah, and Sarah was like, I'm a med student, and I went to school with you, so I guess I'll do the podcast.
Nepotism.
With you.
Yeah,
we're not related.
Isn't there still nepotism?
I'm not sure.
Nepotism's family. Anyway,
moving back.
I tend to mentally, and I think a lot of other people do the same thing, mentally conflate the skeptical and atheist communities because I think there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah, there is.
So at this point, I'm treating them as the same thing. Which I'm sure you hate because you're right in there and you understand the nitty gritty differences.
I don't entirely hate that.
There are differences.
There are.
But as you're saying,
if you're right in there, people would be like, those are very important differences. But as someone outside the communities,
they both wear fedoras, whatever.
Exactly. If we're talking about image, their images are very much overlapped.
And what's the negative connotation there?
The negative connotation, I think, is a little bit... I had this. What was it? That it's quite sort of in-groupy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of mutual back padding going on. There's a lot of
men in their 20s with neckbeards in their parents' basement.
There's a certain amount of that. There's a certain amount of aren't we very
Stop
smart.
Stop describing yourself, Jack.
Because his neckbeard's not too bad at the moment.
I shaved yesterday. Also, I don't live in my parents' basement.
No. So,
and I don't... Oh, I do own a fedora, but
I keep an eye on the Twitter sometimes, and there's a tendency to be a little bit smug and a little bit snappy when people say things like...
Like snappy in a dress sense?
Yeah, both senses. mostly not dress. People will say things like, but I don't... Atheists say they don't believe in anything, but isn't that a belief? And then atheists will just be like, no, shut up. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm sure you are sick of hearing that. But it's still, I think both sides, the skeptical atheisty side and the pro supernatural religious side,
we're harkening back to the radical beliefs thing here.
Yeah,
I think.
Whoa, it's relevant.
Oh, it is.
It is.
So both sides have very radical elements, which are the loud, noisy, obnoxious ones that everybody sees, and both sides also have the elements that don't really feel that radical about it and just wish everybody would shut up and get along.
Yeah. And I think, although I don't tend to group the atheist community and the skeptic community together as much, I think, maybe because I've got more friends who are associated with them, I think there is still that sense that I still get that idea of, like, not preachiness, but, I mean, like, there is that sense of when you meet someone who purports to be from that community that... If you say something, you might be greeted with a lecture.
Yeah.
Which, I mean...
A
very practiced, yeah. Which, I mean, comes with anybody from any sort of, like, community with a belief. Mm. Like, it's the same when you meet someone who's a fundamentalist Christian. You're expecting them to be like, oh, well, have you heard about Jesus?
I'm sure people probably, when they talk to me, they're like, oh, don't talk to Tom about science.
Yeah.
You'll get something wrong and then he'll try and correct you.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure, is annoying.
So all it means is that, like... We're passionate about it, or like it's yeah.
Hmm.
We have an image of a passionate
group
of people.
So probably any group is seen from the outside as being a little obnoxious, merely for the fact that you're in a group, you care a lot about something that other people probably don't care that much about.
It depends.
We're just getting a little meta here.
Yeah,
I think a lot of groups are seen a bit like that, but not all groups are.
I think
and
almost
the extent
all groups.
To which they are seen like that,
unless you're a group like the Girl Scouts.
Which
is just delicious,
like,
biscuits.
With your cookies.
Excuse me, we're in Australia. They're called biscuits.
Hey, I still eat cookies and biscuits.
But you get groups American like people scum. Who like art, and everyone's like, artsy wankers. You get groups of people who like sport, and you're like, oh, look at these friggin' sport guys off to see a game. probably going to come home drunk and start
again.
A riot.
You're going to stab someone with a tiny
Everyone
little
Everyone always
missile.
Kind of is annoyed by groups they're not in, because that's just how people work.
So you're saying every group has an image problem?
Yes, but I have gotten off topic. I think some groups have worse image problems. I'm
some
not sure
more
skeptics
equal than others.
Are the worst.
I think as image problems go, skeptics have less of an image problem than atheists. But I think
true.
They've both got sort of moderate level
image
problems.
Because skepticism is like sort of a little bit watered down,
yeah.
at least image-wise, than atheism. You're not just like, I hate religion. You're like, guys, let's not jump into supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
So let's see what some listeners thought. So Danny says, I think the word skeptics has a bit of an image problem, particularly as it's been hijacked by denialists. So this was a common answer.
Yeah.
I don't even consider them real skeptics.
I think that is the biggest influence on the image of skepticism.
Because that became
purely
like
through
a real
word
in the lexicon, didn't it?
Yeah.
Misappropriation of the word, basically.
Yeah, so if you say to someone, I'm a skeptic, they're like, I don't know, I'm going to not talk to you about the weather. And that's a real problem because the tide is sort of turning in terms of public opinion with regards to climate change.
Yeah, that's true.
And most people accept that climate change is real. So you're sort of, you're not getting the proper message across there with regards to
skepticism. Do you go around saying to people, I'm a skeptic?
I don't. Nobody does that. Unless, like, you don't walk up to someone in the street, good day, I'm a skeptic.
Would you like to hear some skeptical things?
Would you like some tea?
Have you seen Doctor Who?
don't have a go, mate. No, it comes up. Like, you're like, okay, I do a podcast.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's called The Pseudoscientists. We kind of talk about science communication and politics sometimes, and also the skeptical community. What, you don't like climate change? No, we talk about that a lot, but it's not, we like it. I mean, we don't like it, but
we're cool with it.
We accept the reality. We're okay. Don't stab me with your umbrella.
Or your trumpet.
Yeah, so that's a conversation I've had many times, and I sound less confident than I did then. Oh, what else have other people say? Gino says, it's one thing to say that the word skeptic has a bad name/image. I see the reason is the lack of education of the general public. I have no problem with the label/term skeptic, and if people don't understand the term, I have no problems educating them. I guess, the way to combat this image problem is to sort of wrest back the control of the word from climate change skeptics.
There are people here saying things like, this is Brenzel Washington, I don't know who that is, is that a Twitter thing? He's saying people don't understand what a skeptic is. I tend to stick to terms like critical thinker or activist for logic, which I think is
makes
kind of
sound
nice.
Slightly wanky.
A little bit wanky, yes. Critical thinker is a good term.
Yeah, or other people are saying things like rationalist or science enthusiast. Science enthusiast, again, sounds a little wanky. Like, you go
rationalist
watch,
sounds way wankier.
Watch trains.
I like to be correct in all my beliefs.
Still, I think it's legit.
I would implore you to do the same.
Look, but all that's basically
wanky.
What skepticism
skeptic
is.
Sounds wanky. You call yourself anything like that, it's going to sound a little wanky. You've just got to pick the one that's the most accurate.
But the thing with skeptic is that it's a negative term. So I'm a skeptic of this because I disbelieve.
So if you say rationalist,
I'm a rationalist,
it's a positive term.
That's true.
I like to figure out how things work and not just jump to conclusions. I think rationalist is quite a good one.
No, but I think it kind of makes you sound a little bit like my beliefs are rational. But everyone believes their beliefs are rational.
Exactly. But if you're a rationalist, You're actively reasoning. Your beliefs are all about being rational.
And you're
like,
part
I
of
believe
the royal
a bunch of
society.
Stuff, and I think it's rational.
On decree of Her Royal Majesty. I don't know why I'm speaking like that. People aren't like that in the rationalists. So essentially, most of the answers that we got were along those lines. And I think the way to change this, people mentioned this as well, is communication, trying to get our message out there without necessarily branding ourselves with a certain label. Because really it's not about making sure that everyone says that they're like in the general public says they're a skeptic. It's about them doing the sorts of things that we know as a skeptic are valuable, like thinking about things thoroughly, appreciating science, not taking things at face value, blah blah
and
blah.
I think, look, I guess I'm not the right person to talk about this because I'm not into groups in general.
You're the perfect person to talk about because you're sort of a little bit outside it, so you can judge
like
it without
groups.
Going like, oh,
I don't like being a label, being I'm a skeptic. I'd prefer to be like, I'm a skeptical.
I'm not a
kind
comedian.
Of,
I'm not funny.
I'm a skeptical person or like, I don't know, I like science. You start putting yourself in labels and then suddenly everyone under that label is represented by the same thing, where they might be thoroughly different people.
Tom, he's such a tea drinker.
We've got some false or some true false uniqueness going
absolutely.
On here.
Absolutely, or something.
Yeah. Somebody learned a phrase.
I thought that was. I loved that story. That was a good one. I'm going to have to follow up that link.
And strangely relevant.
But I think Alexandra said something as well, I'll just say quickly, which was that. We tend to intimidate people who may be coming in because some people are a bit more blunt in getting
and those will be
across.
The ones people hear first probably
and that might intimidate more people from trying to find out more about
so more hugs less thugs.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, because that's people are like, skepticism, yeah, don't believe in stuff. Whereas the best way to be things is... the best way to get people into that way of thinking isn't to be a skeptic, is being...
Hey,
being
like science?
Well, yeah, or just like, here are
come
some
join my
things.
Hip-hop get rap them in, posse.
Like, tell people the ideas first before you are like, we've got a group, join it. Because, in fact, this is how a lot of people do things. This is how all the groups that try to get members, like the Mormons or anyone trying to recruit donations, Scientologists, they don't say, we're Mormons, let me tell you about it. They say, here's an interesting thing. By the way, if you are kind of into that, consider your true Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's a softer approach.
Yeah, you go in with the values and the ideas first, and then you say, by the way, we're a group.
Mm.
I don't know if that's useful at all. That was just a thought.
No, I think that's a really good point there, Tom.
So our question for next week, because we're approaching Christmas, it's not quite Christmas
time. We're on the runway.
We're
in December.
Yeah,
the decorations are going up.
It's Christmas amber.
So you can buy mince pies in the supermarket.
You can buy them at any time.
They're delicious.
If you want to buy the ingredients and put them together, because you're a baker.
Nobody ever does
that. I would like to say that the question...
the question, Jack.
The question for next week is it ethical to teach your kids that something exists that doesn't exist?
We're going sort of with Santa Claus here, is
Santa
that?
Santa Claus,
is that prime
Tooth
example?
Fairy.
You sort of... people that
crocodiles.
Don't, this isn't like religion where people believe in something and they want the kids to believe in it, which is understandable. This is adults not believing in Santa Claus and things, being like... Hey, yeah, Santa Claus totally exists, kids.
Mm.
This is a big lie that the entire adult world is pulling on you. And one day you're going to find out, you're going to be really upset. But for now, we're all laughing at you a little bit. So
it's actually a really complex topic.
It
and
is.
I'm sure skeptics have talked about it a lot.
Is it cute and nice? Is it an important bit of childhood? Is having this magic
and stuff? Or does it psychologically scar children for life?
Or is it an unnecessary thing where you could just be telling kids the
truth?
Were
you psychologically scarred by the revolution?
I don't personally remember at all.
Santa
but we'll talk
red.
About that next week.
Yep, so that's the question. Send your comments in, Facebook page, Twitter, or the blog post for this episode on our website.
Yep, and if you'd like to contact us on all of those, our Facebook details, we are at the Pseudoscientists and the Young Australian Skeptics. Our Twitter is at YoungAusSkeptic and at PseudoSciPod. We've got an email, YoungAusSkeptics@gmail.com, and our website is also YoungAusSkeptics.com.
If you want to support the show, you can go to lulu.com or our website and find our book, Skeptical Blog Anthology. Buying that supports us, and it's actually a really good book as well. You can also go on iTunes and give us a rating and a review. That really helps people find the show. And the more people find the show, the more people listen to the show, the more we feel good about doing the show, which means more show good is done. Which
good
means
show.
I can talk better than I am now.
Talk good.
Because that's
Jack,
how confidence show. Works. So... go to iTunes if you use iTunes. If not, just tell a friend, because friends are friends and friends deserve podcasts.
Talk good, Jack. Show.
If you want to go to Twitter and follow us personally, I'm Jack L. Scanlon. Tom is Lang Around.
Oh, yeah. But, I changed that, so it's better now.
Yes. And Sarah's not
I'd
on
like
Twitter.
To make an announcement that I will be getting a Twitter.
Because you've been playing so much Pokemon that you're like...
That's the Pokemon, entirely
Pokemon
the only
use
reason.
Twitter. Really? Are you serious?
No.
Oh.
I shall be getting a Twitter
well,
within
let us
the
know.
Next week.
Let
I shall
us know
let you
is.
Know when I see you again next week.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We have been us. You're still you. Our intro and outro music is, as always, Glorious Feeling by Jolistics. And we'll catch you around.
Congratulations on hosting, Tom. It's only been... You've slipped
like
into the role
a million
nicely
years.
After a million years.
This is what I do,
anyway,
Jack.
Guys, we'll
anyway.
See you next time.
Yeah, bye.
Catch you later.
Glorious feeling, I'm up on my feet again. It's a glorious feeling, I'm up on my feet again. God gave up on the human race.
They got some male rats. Wait, were they rats or
mice? Mice.
Sorry, they got some male rice. They got some rice. They got some mats.
Mats and...
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.